everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show. And Tom, we're settling in for near record high temperatures here. It is too early for mid-90s. There, I said it.
Well, how about let's modify it and call it low 90s.
Okay, I will definitely go with that rather than mid-90s. Yeah, you know, maybe 92, 94 degrees. On Saturday, it's Thursday, March 24th, 2022. We are in our 12th year with the radio project, 34 years on TV and radio in Tucson. The Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio is where we are broadcasting from 10:30. Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, and we will be utilizing the live line for our first two segments. We begin with former Tucson City Councilman Rodney Glassman. He is back and running for Arizona Attorney General. The Phoenix attorney is one of six candidates in the Republican AG primary race. The primary in Arizona is August 2nd. Since winning the Tucson council seat in 2007 as a Democrat, Mr. Glassman has made unsuccessful runs for U.S. Senate, the Arizona Corporation Commission, and most recently Maricopa County Assessor. Rodney, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. Thank you for having me on the show.
Tell me a little bit about why you feel you will be successful in this run for AG.
Well, Bill, thank you for that question. We've been friends for a long time, and as you know, I'm an Air Force prosecutor. I've prosecuted drug dealers and financial crimes and protected victims of sexual assault. I'm actually now a major in the United States Air Force JAG Corps Reserves, but I am assigned on the active duty side. So when I now put on my uniform, I run the active duty legal offices, whether it's Luke Air Force Base in Phoenix or Eielson Air Force Base up in Fairbanks. But additionally, I've built a law practice over the past decade, practicing business law and high stakes litigation. And I'm running for attorney general because I know that the job of the attorney general is to protect you and your family and frankly, our family from the government. And it's a very exciting race with six Republicans running. Because of the six Republicans running, believe it or not, Bill, I'm the only Republican running that has led a law office and ran a law office where every other attorney, every paralegal, every support staff reports to me. I'm also the only Republican running who could tell you the name of their last three paying clients from the business community. And those are the kinds of strong, relevant experience that we need in our Arizona Attorney General if he's going to work hard to protect us from the overreach that Arizonans are feeling from every level of government.
You left the Democratic Party, and I have to hand it to you, Rodney Glassman. I took a look at it's a couple of minute video that you and your team have produced on your website. It's kind of like built around what would be like a Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and it's like former Democrats who switched over to the Republican Party. It's kind of cute.
Well, I appreciate that, and I urge your listeners to visit my website. It's rodneyglassman.com. And Bill, as you know, we've known each other for 20 years now.
Yep.
And what happened, because I'm often asked, you know, what happened? And what happened was I registered Republican June 16th, 2015. I actually registered Republican the day that Donald Trump announced his candidacy for president. And as I like to say, like former President Ronald Reagan and like former President Donald Trump, I, too, used to be a Democrat. But what happened most importantly is I grew up. I mean, I was a Tucsonan starting age 19. And over time, got married, had kids, began working full-time in the private sector, served for more than a decade in the United States Air Force JAG Corps as a reservist. And as the Democratic Party continued to move left, I, as Rodney Glassman, just a person, continued to mature and evolve in what my priorities were about. And at some point, I was inspired when I saw Donald Trump, a business guy willing to give up his career to do what he felt was right. And that's what eventually inspired me to make the switch.
So you feel this is a really good switch, obviously, or a good fit, excuse me, because you are a practicing attorney and you've got a lot of legal experience. So does this obviously feels right for you, Rodney Glassman?
This feels spectacular, and it is. And the reality is, Bill, is we're fighting to protect our way of life. It's not just about protecting Arizonans from the federal government. Because when we graduated from the U of A law school, my wife and I, the laws were the same as they are today. If you come here illegally, you're to be arrested, you're to be incarcerated, and you're to be barred. But we now live in a country where if you come here illegally, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris rent you hotel rooms in Scottsdale. But we also live in a state where our government shuts down businesses. Bill, you know, I started out with a small business, and I believe that business owners and their customers know when businesses should be opened and when they should be closed. And we now have cities across the state, whether it's Tucson or Phoenix, where they're working to defund the police, where they're working to eliminate qualified immunity. And when my daughters or my wife or I call 911, we want a police officer to come to the door, not a counselor. And we now have girls that are in school, and we need to make sure that rogue school boards are not pushing critical race theory, are not pushing mandates, that teachers are teaching English and math and writing and not politics. And the one elected official that unilaterally can fight back against that kind of government overreach at all levels is the Arizona Attorney General. And that is why I am passionate about this race. That is why I put my law practice on hold. That is why my wife and I invested in this campaign heavily. That's why we've raised over $1.5 million since I filed in September. And Bill, I think this will be meaningful to you, because I know you are an advocate for public safety as well. There's been 6 police endorsements in our race, 6 police endorsements statewide. And it's a 6-way primary, Bill.
Yeah.
I've received all 6 endorsements from police associations.
Wow. So you're having a pretty good reception. What about from well-known politicians?
Yeah, I'm proud to have the support of both the president of the state Senate, Karen Fan, the majority leader of the state House, Ben Thoma, council members from across the state. Bill, we had an event just the other night, and President Fan introduced me, and she started off by letting everyone know that she's been friends with me for over 20 years, because when I was on the Tucson City Council, she was the mayor of Chino Valley. As you know, and you and I used to run into each other at the grocery store, at the bathroom there, and have different kinds of conversations. I have done a lot of community work. I've worked hard, and that is why someone with a track record like mine, of being someone committed to fighting, committed to being relentless, committed to being tenacious, I lean into the fact that I've always, as you know, offered myself up to community service, whether it was by creating the nonprofit that I created, by serving on nonprofit boards such as the Boy Scouts and the Heart Association and others while in Tucson. If voters or listeners are looking for a quitter in their next attorney general, then you know I'm not that guy. But if they're looking to hire the lawyer that they know won't give up, that they know doesn't take no for an answer, then that's why they'll be voting for Rodney Glassman in this Republican primary.
Well, you have had to get off the mat here after you know, these three races where you lost. How did you go about that mentally, preparing yourself to run again?
Well, Bill, this is not a race for an elected office that fits in with my private law career, my Air Force duty, my commitment to family, and my commitment to community service. Serving as Attorney General, running the largest law office in the state of Arizona with 425 attorneys and 800 support staff, and fighting every day against government overreach to protect our way of life and to protect Arizonans from the government, is a full-time job. This is an all-in race for an all-in job to protect our way of life. And that is how my wife and I and our family are taking this on.
All right, Rodney Glassman, I'm going to have to wrap it up with you. Good reconnecting with you. What about your website?
It's rodneyglassman.com, Bill, and I'm down every week or two. We're proud to have the support of business leaders, be it Mike Kasser from Hulualoa or the Whiteman family from Royal Automotive or most recently Taylor Carter from Fire Truck Brewing. We've got business people and parents and moms and dads all ready to have an attorney general that's going to be looking out for them, and I look forward to earning your listeners' support.
Thank you very much, Rodney. Appreciate it. Good connecting with you.
We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot. Rodney Glassman, Republican running for Arizona Attorney General. Mona's Danish Bakery is home of the Danish Kringle. We love Mona's. I keep discovering new things from the bakery case, and you may have heard me talk in the last couple of days about my newest discovery. I love the bear claws. This was a recommendation of the dentist who did my emergency root canal on Friday. The dentist, a huge fan of Mona's, and gave me a tip. Try the bear claw. Did so on Sunday, and I'm really glad I did. But they've got everything you could imagine. Well, they've got all these beautiful breads. They've got the wonderful croissants. They, of course, have the Danish Kringle, the Danish coffee cake. They are open right now for lunch. Might want to, if you're a big fan like I am of the tuna melt, they will do one for you, and it will be the best one you've ever had. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com. Open at 6:30. Breakfast is served Tuesday through Sunday. Yes, they are now taking a day off. They are closed Monday. We will be right back on the Buckmaster Show right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Tucson and Don Smith has written a book on a unique episode in Cold War history. It's a success story for Germans and Americans. Steinstuken, A Little Pocket of Freedom, is the title of the book. Steinstuken is a West Berlin neighborhood. It was part of the American sector in Berlin during the Cold War. However, Steinstuken was completely surrounded by communist-controlled territory. The Americans couldn't even send soldiers or supplies to the village without risking a confrontation and a possible combat with Soviets or East Germans. Yet for more than 20 years, American soldiers and diplomats kept Steinstuken out of communist hands. The village residents showed determination and even courage in resisting communist pressure. They also managed to live relatively normal lives and build a bond with Americans that stays strong to this day. And Don Smith joins us now on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Don, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Bill, and thanks for this opportunity.
Well, the big question is, how in the world were they able to manage? Well, why don't we begin with, how did this little-known story come to light? How did you find out about it?
I'm a Cold Warrior myself. I was in the Army from 1986 to 1989 in Germany. And when we were stationed in Germany, we were encouraged to go to Berlin because that's where you could really see the Cold War up close and personal. So I went to Berlin three times, and on one time I visited the neighborhood of Steinstuken. And it was fascinating. The way that you got there was to go down this hill country road, and on both sides of the road, just like 4 or 5 feet off the side of the road, was the Berlin Wall with walls and watchtowers, East German machine guns, and then you got to the end of the road and there was this little village. And I never forgot this place, and a few years ago I found out that nobody had written an English language history of it, so I jumped at the opportunity.
How did it become this little pocket of freedom? Why was it not included in the communist sector?
Because it was officially part of a neighborhood or a borough in Berlin that was part of the American occupation sector. And it had always been like this. There had always been about a kilometer or two of territory separating this little neighborhood from the rest of Berlin. But it was still officially treated as part of one of the boroughs in Berlin. And when World War II ended and the Allied powers occupied Berlin, the way they decided to divide up the city was by taking the boroughs in the city and allocating them out to the different occupying powers. So, for example, the Soviets got the boroughs on the east side of the city. The Americans got the boroughs on the southwest side of the city. And the borough that Steinstuken was part of became part of the American sector. So when this East Germans tried to take over the neighborhood in 1951, the Americans stood on principle and said, nope, the agreement was that we would be responsible for certain boroughs. That neighborhood, even though it's a really inconvenient spot for both the UN and me, is still part of the American sector, and the Soviets respected that.
And how are the Americans able to supply this little pocket of freedom?
Well, the villagers themselves, the Berliners, were allowed to go back and forth by the East German Guard. There was a road that connected the village to the city. And so the village is really a neighborhood community. There are no businesses or anything in it except one little convenience store. Everybody who lived in the village either went to school or worked in West Berlin. So they were able to go back and forth and go to the stores and such. The Americans maintained an outpost in the village after the Berlin Wall crisis in 1961 because they were concerned about the safety of the village. And the soldiers flew in and out by helicopter.
Hmm. Were there, is there, or was there fencing all around the little borough?
After the Berlin Wall in 1961, there was. But before that, during the 1950s, there wasn't. East Germans could have walked into the village very easily. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to write the book, is that the villagers showed a lot of faith in the Americans. And there are many times when they actually stood up and resisted the East Germans and resisted the Soviets. And this is kind of dangerous for them because there were no American troops close by from throughout the 1950s. So if the East German border guards had just wanted to walk in and take somebody, they could have.
What was your experience in visiting with the residents? I assume you talked with those that are still alive and are that wanted to talk about this.
They want their story to be remembered because, you know, it's a unique story, and lots of people are forgetting a lot about the Berlin Wall and Cold War Berlin. It's been 30 years since the wall came down, and they wanted their stories recorded. And so a few of them were still alive, and I was able to get their stories. And they are they're eager to have them told, as are the Americans who served there.
You mentioned that you had served over in Berlin. Tell us a bit about your experiences over there, Don Smith.
I didn't serve in Berlin. I served in Frankfurt, Germany. So I was actually in West Germany. But I had a chance to go into West Berlin and East Berlin three times. And it was a sobering experience. You went to what was called Checkpoint Charlie. I think we've all heard of that. And that's what you went through to get into East Berlin. And Americans made a habit of going over there to visit because it was such a novelty. It was actually a chance to visit a communist country. And it was sobering, though, because you could tell that the government didn't want the Soviet and the East German people to have much contact with you. I went into an East German guest house once in my uniform, and as I walked up to the guest house, there were a whole bunch of Soviet soldiers sitting outside. And I went into the guest house, got my beer, I looked out the window, and the sergeant was shooing all the Soviet soldiers away, because they couldn't be in the same building as I was because I was an American.
Hmm. Had you ever written a book before, or if this is, was this the first book, and what was that process like for you, Don?
It's my first book, and it's been about 8 years gathering the information, doing all the research, doing the writing. And I'll tell you, writing a book really has to be a labor of love, but this one was so much fun because it's a fascinating story to see how the Americans got involved in Berlin right at the end of World War II and up to the Cold War, and to see the relationship between the Americans and the Germans change as Germany started off as a defeated nation in 1945, but then revived and went from being a defeated ally to a strong partner, which it is nowadays.
I want to circle back a little bit, and it's something I've always been curious about, Don Smith. How those lines were drawn up. Here you had this pretty much totally destroyed city, a city of rubble. Kind of looks like some of the pictures we have been seeing out of places like Mariupol in Ukraine. I mean, just totally devastated. How did the Allies draw up those boundary lines?
Well, in 1944, the Allies started planning how they were going to occupy Berlin, and they quickly realized that once they took control of the city, they would have to run it, including all the administrative things that you have with the city, schools, sewers, and things like that. And somebody realized that Berlin is made up of boroughs, like New York City is made up of boroughs, Brooklyn, Manhattan. And each of those boroughs has their own individual government and civil servants. And so the Americans, British, and Soviets said, why don't we just go ahead and instead of just drawing lines on a map, we'll divide out the boroughs amongst the occupying powers. And that way, the Americans, for example, if they want the local officials to do something, all they have to do is call in the local official government, tell them to do it, and they'll do it. And it made it a lot easier to manage the city that way. So the way the city was divided up was based on the outlines of the various boroughs.
Did it work?
It did. Within the boroughs, it did. At first, the Allies tried having a four-power government that was going to run the entire city. And at least on the American side, when the World War II ended, there was this feeling of optimism that we would be able to work with the Soviets. But that quickly eroded once you got into 1946 and 1947. The political differences were just too great. And so then eventually the city split into East and West Berlin, just like East and West Germany split.
All right, Don, we're going to have to let you go, but we would like to direct people to a location where they can find out more about you and the book.
Okay. I have a website that talks all about the book. The website's name is Stein Pocket, S-T-E-N, like Beer Stein, pocket.com. You can also go to my publisher's website, which is Acclaim Press, acclaimpress.com. We prefer that people buy the book from Acclaim Press because, frankly, we get more money that way, both the publisher and I, but the book is also on Amazon. So however you get it, that's great for us.
Don Smith, thank you very much.
Bill, thank you for this opportunity. Appreciate it.
All right, we're going to take a break right here. Coming up next, boy, it's like waiting for the other shoe to drop with this threat of cybersecurity from the Russians. Attorney Kathy Winger is waiting in the wings. She's next.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Discover your world inside Biosphere 2. Explore living, breathing scientific research. Using the new Biosphere 2 Experience app, you can now explore one of the wonders of the world's amazing 30-year history and future through never-before-seen videos and photos. Visit today at info@biosphere2.org. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. You know, this would be a great weekend to go over to Green Things and get some beautiful things for the garden. When we have temperatures over 90 degrees, well, you know, we start thinking about what kind of plants will do well right up until the monsoon and the summer rain. The people over at Green Things can steer you in the right direction, a beautiful 13-acre site that is also home to Zocalo and really nice merchandise if you're looking for like a dining room set with some handcrafted items from Mexico or right here in Tucson using mesquite woods. They've got some beautiful things at Zocalo Village. Green Things is open daily. They're in their 51st year. We love them. They're over at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Let's talk next about cybersecurity, and we're all like on pins and needles. I know I am, because I'm worried about the Russians and what kind of a big cyber attack they may have coming our way. Kathy Winger, Tucson attorney, is with us, and Kathy is an expert in cybersecurity. She is a recent, she's a frequent guest to this program, and we always love to bring in Kathy to the program. She is an adjunct professor at Pima Community College, where she teaches a class about cybersecurity and cyber law and ethics. Kathy, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill. Thanks.
Like I say, waiting for the other shoe to drop. The president has warned Americans to be prepared. Was the warning more toward, I would assume, and I that it would be more toward business owners. However,
yes.
As consumers, we've got to be alert.
Absolutely. And, you know, the warning, I think, was significant for several reasons. First of all, you know, since the whole hostilities have started with Russia and Ukraine, people in the cybersecurity field have been warning about an increased risk of attacks, how that really could be a part of the war,
yes.
Attacks and responses to attacks. So that general warning was out there. And then, as you mentioned, President Biden came out and issued a warning just a few days ago. He issued a statement on our nation's cybersecurity. And what's concerning about that is what we've seen so far with respect to the war between Russia and Ukraine is American intelligence as to what the Russians are planning to do has been pretty spot on. They've given other warnings of things that they expect to happen, and those things have happened. So for the president to come out and say that, it sort of made, I think, a lot more people's ears perk up. And as you say, it's for businesses, but the problem or the issue is with cybersecurity, it affects all of us.
Well, yeah. What about, you know, they haven't named, the president didn't name any particular industries, but we can all assume banking, utilities, all would be at risk. And that, of course, would affect everybody.
Exactly. And what he did mention was critical infrastructure owners and operators. And that's really what is looked at as a big target. So you have the owners and operators of critical infrastructures who would be businesses, but then you have citizens because we're the customers.
Yeah.
You know, so what affects critical infrastructure affects us. And to be honest, that's the point of it. You know, mm-hmm. to have a cyber attack that really is felt, you know, by the country, you're going to want to attack something that affects the most number of citizens in the country and something that they rely upon. So it's not surprising that these would be the targets of it. I think what's surprising, as I said, was that the president came out with this statement and sort of raised the level. I know from, you know, in the Homeland Security area, we have have terrorist alerts.
Yeah.
This was similar to that to me, raising the level to a level red that this could happen and that it was very likely that it would happen.
Have they been doing, have the Russians used cyber attacks against Ukraine?
They have. They have. Now, I will say with respect, and against Ukraine, it was early on in the hostilities, they weren't huge. And I didn't see too much about them other than the first few days of it. But when they did, it's critical infrastructure. That's really what they were attacking. And I think there was some surprise that they hadn't used it more and that it hadn't happened already to us and to NATO countries, you know, to all the countries that are on the other side of these hostilities. So I think, you know, what I'm getting from this is to have an attack like this happen is a serious step, and it's an escalation of hostilities in and of itself, just that step. And so I think the fact that we may have a heads up that something like that will happen, it is really important for everyone to take note of. And people who have control, what the president said, he basically framed it as a patriotic duty that companies have. He referred to it to critical infrastructure owners and operators should accelerate their efforts to lock their digital doors. The country needs everyone to do their part to meet one of the defining threats of our time. So to me, it's almost, you know, like a wartime warning. You know, everybody needs to pull together to do this for the country. And so it's really viewed as defending the country when you're defending networks and you're defending the cyber world, because everything is tied in so tightly and so closely to it.
How much liability do businesses have if something like this happens?
Well, they
I mean, could a consumer say, well, I'm going to sue you if this...
Well, there is exposure, yes. Yeah. I mean, generally, you know, you have this situation of, you know, there's not a lot businesses can do if Russia launches a cyber attack. They're not in international relations and not able to sort of negotiate that. But businesses do have an obligation to take commercially reasonable steps to protect information. And so that obligation is to consumers, is to customers to take those steps. So if there is a breach and if a consumer, if a customer or a client is harmed and they can allege and establish that the business didn't take commercially reasonable steps to protect their information, then there's liability and exposure. In the cybersecurity area, the fact that a bad actor commits the crime doesn't necessarily get the business off the hook. The question is, what did the business do? Even if a bad actor got the information, even if Russia attacked, if the business should have taken steps to protect information and didn't, they can't escape liability by saying, well, it was Russia that attacked or it was a criminal that attacked. They still have an obligation to protect that information. So the exposure is definitely there.
790-2040, 790-2040. We're going to open up our live line for Buckmaster Show listeners. If you have any questions about cybersecurity, Kathy Winger is with us. Kathy, 58%, that's the proportion of state-sponsored cyber attacks globally that Russia accounted for between July 2020 and June of 2021. According to Microsoft's latest digital defense. So obviously Russia is the big player in this area.
That's correct. Yes.
So,
yes.
I mean, this is an area that this is what they do.
And yes, they have the capabilities. They've demonstrated throughout the past years that they have the capabilities. The question now is whether or not they will use them, you know, because the question that, you know, NATO is grappling with, President Biden is grappling with, is if there's a cyber attack on a NATO country, is that considered an act of war that would then bring NATO in in to defend. You know, they're looking at that and evaluating what that is and whether or not that is. So that's a huge, huge issue. That's a huge question to be considered. It's a question that has never had to be considered before. So we know that Russia has the capability. The question is, are they going to exercise it? And then the answer comes from NATO and NATO-aligned countries. What will the response be? You know, is there just a defensive response, or is there an offensive response on behalf of those countries? Because we have the same capabilities, similar if not better capabilities.
Retaliation,
exactly.
We're talking.
Exactly.
Not just from the United States, all the NATO countries.
Exactly. So. Or does the United States have an obligation to defend when a NATO country is attacked? Just like if somebody dropped a bomb on a NATO country. Mm-hmm. You know, a cyber attack is viewed or can be viewed. You know, they haven't determined it, but could potentially be viewed the same way.
It's a new playing field.
Absolutely. It's not ever had to be considered before on this level.
When we come back with Kathy Winger, what can we as individuals do to kind of shore up our defenses in preparation for what many believe will be coming, some kind of a massive cyber attack? But right now, we'll take a break on Buckmaster. Be right back with attorney Kathy Winger.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Thinking about a weekend getaway? How about Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico? Just looking at their midday high, mid-60s, and they're looking at temperatures this weekend. Perfect. 75 to 80 degrees. Going to be a great weekend in Silver City. Pack up the car, pack up the truck, 3-hour drive east of Tucson approximately, and then do some hiking. outdoor activities in Silver City or just kind of hanging out, enjoying a lot of that Victorian architecture. Really kind of neat place to visit. Silver City in Grant County, the starting place. We like to send people to their website before you take the drive, because you'll find out all sorts of things about where to stay and activities. SouthwestNewMexico.org. We continue now in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios with attorney Kathy Winger. Kathy is our cybersecurity expert, and she's spoken at conferences all over the country about this, teaches it. And now, Kathy, we talked about, the big businesses, and I'm sure everybody that's associated with a utility or a bank, they're probably going over their protocols and trying to shore up their security. But what about you and me, and individuals? Are there some simple things that we could do to make ourselves feel at least like we might be ready?
Absolutely. And interestingly enough, a lot of the simple things that we can mm-hmm. do are things that businesses should be doing and can do as well. And I like to refer to it as cyber hygiene, So keeping things clean. It's also, in the industry, best practices, specifically when I mentioned President Biden's statement that he came out with. He talked about locking their digital doors, businesses sure. locking their digital doors. So it's all of that sort of thing, but it really applies to companies and individuals. So the first thing that I recommend and that, cybersecurity experts recommend is to have a continued awareness surrounding online activities. What are you doing online? What sites are you going to? Who are you getting emails from? What Wi-Fi are you using? You need to just be aware of when you're online, you have this huge exposure to anything that's happening in the online world, and that would include a cyber attack. So that's one of the easy ones. It's think about it. Don't do it without thinking about
it.
And
if you get a notice from your provider for an upgrade, take it. Because they sometimes will say, can we schedule a time that's more convenient? I usually just do it right away.
Right. And that's another recommendation. That's another concept of a best practice. Mm-hmm. If you get a notice to update, I get them from Apple all the time. If you have especially antivirus software mm-hmm. and they send you an update, mm-hmm. implement the update, because the reason they're sending mm-hmm. it is to fix holes in what they provided to you or to fix things that they've seen. And that means they're seeing it and you need the protection. And again, and that's a really simple thing. If you bought antivirus software, it doesn't cost you anything to upgrade.
No.
If they're telling you to do that, do it.
And let's take this call from Roberta,
sure.
who's been waiting. Roberta, go ahead. You're with attorney Kathy Winger.
Thank you. Now, if I answer a phone call, an email, or read an email, or a voicemail, or a text, does that let anyone get my information off my phone or scam me?
Well, it can, in terms of what you provide to them, just by virtue of doing it and answering it, no. But with emails and with texts, I'm seeing more of that now as well. And with phone calls, the way to protect yourself with phone calls is if, you don't want to provide personal information to whoever's calling unless you know who it is and you've verified that they're a trusted source. When it comes to text messages and when it comes to emails, typically just having them come to your device doesn't expose you. The exposure comes in, or the greatest area of exposure, is if there's a link included and if you click on it, because once you click on it, you're going somewhere or you're opening up your system to that. And so one of the things on my my list of recommendations is to not do that. Yeah. You know, and the way that I describe it is to be completely skeptical and paranoid. Trust no one. And that's a terrible.
That's good advice.
But it's true. And actually, I say be eternally and relentlessly skeptical and paranoid. And you really have to do that because, especially with emails, I had a situation where I got an email from who I thought was a client, a long-term client of mine. And what they were asking me seemed odd, and they wanted me to click on something, and I would never click on anything, or hopefully I wouldn't. Sometimes I forget and I come close to doing it. But I answered the email and I said, you know, did you mean to send that to me? Mm-hmm. And they responded and said yes. And I was still, there was a little part of me that just thought, you know, this just doesn't feel right. So I called my client.
I thought that would be the way to do it.
And
pick
she
up
didn't.
The old,
I did.
The good old phone and pick up and say, what's this about?
Exactly. So when I called her, she said, no, I didn't.
Wow.
But, you know, so they had found a way to get the name of my client and have a back and forth with me about that.
Yes.
So that's why I say being so skeptical. So whether it's the phone, whether it's emails, and I'm getting a lot myself personally of texts from weird numbers with links saying I should click on them, do not do it. You know, it just, that's where you get into trouble. So
good question, Roberta.
Yeah,
thank you
for
very
that.
Much. Now, what about passwords?
That's the other one of the things I was going to talk about too. They call it a password strategy. And, you know, the reason for that is you want a password that is very difficult to crack. And, you know, that there are experts, you can Google password strategies that can tell you what passwords you can use that will be harder to crack. And that's really the key. So you want to do that. You want to have a digital wallet. There are services where you can store your passwords so that you have them, because they're usually all different. They have letters, numbers, phrases, and things like that. But the other thing and the other piece of advice that I repeatedly give to people is, and this is particularly on Facebook, and I see this a lot, Facebook has lots of quizzes, you know, supposedly to get to know
you. Yeah, I see those all the time.
I recommend that people do not participate in those, because you could very easily be giving clues away to your password. Let's say, for example, you have a pet and you use part of your pet's name in your password, or your pet's name in your password.
Or favorite
and you're
color.
Doing a quiz and you're saying my pet's name is Rover. You know, you're providing information to you don't know who and you don't know what they're going to do with it.
Yeah.
So that's where I say the skepticism, you know, and the paranoia. It sounds awful. We should all be able to take a fun quiz on Facebook. You know, that should be. But the risk that you're taking when you do that, at least from my perspective, is just not worth the risk.
When they say, what's your favorite color?
Exactly.
Don't tell them because that might be in a password.
You never know. And, you know, it's such a small thing, you know, to keep yourself from doing that. And that's part of what I say. You always want to be conscious of what you're doing. You know, public Wi-Fi. Don't use public Wi-Fi. You know, that's not typically secure.
Right.
You know, so all of those kinds of things are what come into your mind when you're thinking about individual personal cybersecurity.
I've got 30 seconds.
Okay.
Your final thoughts.
My final thoughts are, you know, I think if you keep these things in mind, you have a better shot of being protected. There's no such thing as 100% protection for anybody. That is just an impossible goal. You just want to do the best that you can and take as many steps as you can to protect yourself. Whether you're a business or an individual, the advice is the same.
How do folks get a hold of you for your speaking engagements?
The easiest way is to email me. It's Kathy, my name, Kathy, at kdwinger, WINGER.com. Or you could always call me 520-391-4475.
Kathy Winger, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Bill.
All right. On behalf of Kathy and Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show, Bill Buckmaster with you and saying join us in about 23 hours. Laura Conover, Pima County Attorney, will be with me along with award-winning Arizona Daily Star columnist Tim Steller will be here. That's tomorrow. on the Buckmaster Show. Till then, have a great afternoon.